You can now hear Film Actually on Stitcher Radio. Stitcher allows you to listen to your favorite shows directly on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or WebOS device. The latest episode is always available for you. No syncing needed, no memory wasted. Don't have Stitcher? Download it for free today at Stitcher.com.
Supposed to meet up with Jamie.
Who's that, headhunter?
Huh?
What, you guys going out now?
No, we're just friends. We're messing around a little bit.
Well, what do you mean?
Sleeping together, but it's just sex.
That never works, bro.
She's a girl. Sex always means more to them, even if they don't admit it.
Jamie's different.
Does she have a penis where most girls have a vagina?
No penis.
Then she's no different.
What do you know about women anyway?
Dude, I've turned down more tail than you'll ever have.
Yeah, bro, you're gay.
But the offers still keep rolling in, naturally. Look at me.
It'll be much less terrifying if you just come to me.
Wolfman's got
nerve! Make love in the hammock!
What?
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Film Actually, episode 78 for the 5th of March, 2012. I am David McVeigh, and I am joined by Josh Philpott. How are you, Josh?
I'm good, man. I am really good.
That's fantastic. And Josh, we have a full house today.
I know, it's nice, isn't it?
It is.
I get to speak to Richard, and he gets to throw in those banter things that throw me off when I'm talking. I love those.
Richard Gray, come on down.
What have I won?
Nothing. You don't get paid for this.
You get nothing.
I'm just so glad to be a part of this.
How are you, Richard? It's nice to have all three of us back on deck.
That's right.
Because it's been It's been an odd couple of weeks.
It has been odd. Like, I think we've been going out of our way to stay away from each other.
I think we have. You know what, though? It's really sad that we've all come back together for this episode and there's bugger all to talk about. Anyway, we will make our way through this episode and see how we go. This week, we are going to review, well, two of us are going to review the new romantic drama. Best way to put it?
Yeah,
romantic drama like crazy. And we're also going to, the three of us, review, finally, we've been planning this since just before Christmas, Space Battleship Yamato, the live-action new film, which is available on Blu-ray and DVD now. And we will talk a little bit more about that a little bit later on as well. We also have a brand new list of five this week, five Academy Award-nominated films that should have won Best Film. And that's actually a listener-requested list, and we'll come back to that a little bit later in the show as well. But first, as we like to do this, we should introduce the show. It's Film Actually, the official movie podcast of geekactually.com. And we always start the show with a little bit of what we've been watching. Josh! What have you been watching this week?
Jesus. Well, I went out and made the best of, and I'm actually doing this. This isn't a work paid thing, but I'm going to do it anyway, which is that I went down and smashed into the new Blu-ray sale that they have at JB.
I saw that today.
Oh, dude, it is absolutely amazing. This isn't just a revamped a few extra titles on the list that they already have. They have everything in this bin.
And this is buy two, get one free.
Dude, I am going to pick up the entire Die Hard series on Blu-ray, and it's only going to cost me like $30.
Yay.
Just saying. That's pretty special.
Might be swinging by there on the way home tomorrow.
Yeah. But let's talk about what isn't quite so special, which is that I bought and decided to watch again, and I don't care. You guys can hate me if you want, but I bought Priest, and I watched it again. And you know what? It's still a tragic mess. But it's pretty.
Sorry, you almost made me spit my tea out. I don't care what you think. I watched it. It's still a tragic mess. No argument from me.
Look,
I'll stand,
tragic,
Bruce.
Yeah, exactly. I got to say that realistically, I'm glad to have it in my collection, though, because I love having those films. To me, that film is like having Flash Gordon. I'm sorry, but it is.
Yeah, no, I can see that.
It's like there is enough in there to go, the team worked really hard on this.
Wait a minute, did you say Flash Gordon?
I'm bored.
You know how close I came to ripping Flash for this week?
Oh, dude,
you
what?
My soundboard?
You've got to rely on those things, man. You got it right with Top Gun. When those come into your mind, those are the ones you're supposed to bring.
Oh, damn it. I'll get it right next week, but no one will mention.
So you really enjoyed watching Priest again?
I did. Well, I can't say I enjoyed it because that would be kind of lying. All I have to say is that it's not that bad, but it's also mind-numbing towards the end when I'm going, why are you doing these crazy things that don't make sense? So yeah, it's a bit of both worlds. But yeah, I got that, and I also got a bunch of other films which I haven't seen yet. But I have my other film which I'm saving for soon.
But did you get a bargain basement film?
Oh yes, that's the one I was meaning.
Are you ready?
I am ready.
Good evening, and welcome to Josh's Bargain Basement.
It's so funny now that I know that that isn't live.
Sorry, you missed that, Richard. Josh actually didn't realize I was doing that live every week.
No, I listened to last week's show. I laughed heartily at that. I didn't know you weren't doing it live either. I honestly thought that was all pre-recorded.
I know, because he does it the same way. And it was like, then he stole my line, which was the good evening, and then
He's a pro.
Yeah.
All right, what is the bargain basement film for this week, Josh?
Well, while I was on my spending spree with all of the Blu-rays, I decided to grab a couple of bargain basement films, as I do, and I picked up a tragic film.
Oh, cool.
An absolute mess. And Dave, this is right out of your era of films. Actually, it's kind of just past it. But my God, man, like... The thing that I think happened with this film is that people sat down and went, we need to make a film which is kind of like Point Break, and we need it to be as hardcore and as action-packed, but we need it to be different. And they went, you know what kind of worked? When we took The Fugitive and we did the spin-off with Wesley Snipes, and they went, well, let's get Wesley Snipes and Gary Busey together and throw them out of planes. And it's called Drop Zone.
I've seen Drop Zone.
I've seen that too.
That film is a fucking disgusting mess of just terrible ideas.
Although, can I just say...
with terrible colored jumpsuits.
Can I just say,
though... a whole bunch of stuff that doesn't make sense.
Can I just say, though, that Hollywood always does things in twos and threes. Yeah. And the year that Drop Zone came out, we got another parachuting film, believe it or not, which actually starred Charlie Sheen called Terminal Velocity.
Oh, dude, I remember Terminal Velocity.
Terminal Velocity makes Drop Zone look good.
Yeah, and that's fine, but it doesn't stop the fact that this movie was still relatively tragic. It's been a while since I've seen a movie where I actually just started to not phase out, but actually divert my eyes as I was watching it towards the end of the film. Like, my eyes started to just... There's nothing really behind my TV to look at, but all of a sudden I noticed I was staring at the posters, or that I was staring at the wall beside it.
Wow.
And I realized that I just could not focus on the film, because it's just like, it wants to be about 1,000 action films and gets about 10% of each of them and fucks it all up. That's my review of that film. Like, I actually sat there, and it's like, I usually enjoy a bargain basement film, but this film just had so much. It's not that there's something wrong, but it's that concept that it fails to entertain. And it's like, when a movie's about guns and skydiving and stars Wesley Snipes and Gary Busey, and you can't make that fun, you definitely made a mess of a film.
Do you want to know the saddest part about Drop Zone? And I mean, I've seen Drop Zone, and the saddest part of Drop Zone is it's directed by John Badham. And John Badham actually directed some decent films in his time. I mean, this is the man who actually made, and laugh as you may because it's very dated now, but it was a huge thing in its day. He directed Saturday Night Fever. He directed Blue Thunder. He directed War Games, the original War Games. He directed Short Circuit.
Yeah.
You know? And you look at it, and he directed the first Stakeout, and then his career just took a nosedive.
Yeah, then he made Nick of Time.
Then he did Nick of Time, another Stakeout, The Hard Way, Drop Zone. And you just sit there and go, what happened?
And a TV movie of Evel Knievel.
Oh, did he do that? Oh, my God, did he do that?
He did.
Oh, God. Yeah, oh, man. Yeah, he just took a nosedive in his career. And then now he's languishing in TV hell. He's directing.
That's where all directors that make really bad decisions end up.
He's directed episodes of Psych, Las Vegas. he's directed episodes of Crossing Jordan. He's directed. He directed episodes of The Shield. Interesting. But yeah, he's languishing in TV hell now, basically. But this is a man who actually had a career, a big one. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'm so glad that you brought that up, though. That makes me want to go watch it again.
Well, you can borrow my copy because it's not going back in my DVD.
How much, what did you spend on this movie?
I spent $4.
$4, that's more like it, better than the $10 you spent last week. That was just
spooky. I know, but like I said, it's like I kind of got $10 worth of value out of that one.
That's true. Richard, what have you been watching this week?
I've been watching stacks this week, but some of the highlights include, well, not highlights, but at least big titles. I saw The Rum Diary, which is the new Hunter S. Thompson adaptation.
Oh, come Johnny on, man. Definite. You know how I feel about this film. Tell me about it.
Well, it's a short story stretched out to a feature film. It's got some great character moments. It's really funny in parts, but I'm not quite sure there's enough there for a feature film. But I'll be interested to see what other people think about it.
Well, I will be watching it. So when I do, I'll let you know.
We actually did talk about this last week. We'd been hearing some iffy stuff about it.
But it comes out officially in Australia next week, so I'll talk about it a bit more then if you like.
Cool. Yeah, absolutely.
A couple of other films I'll just run through quickly. I have seen one film I can't talk about, I'm embargoed on, is the new American Pie film.
I'm curious to see that.
Yep. And two other films I want to quickly mention. One of them I saw yesterday. Both of these are Josh-related in some way. The first one is because it's a New Zealand film called Sione's 2 Unfinished Business.
Sorry, what's it called?
Sione's 2 Unfinished Business. I don't know if you remember the first film, Josh, Sione's Wedding, or Samoan Wedding, as it was also called.
Yes, I know.
It's the Naked Samoan guys, yeah?
Yeah.
I was the same guys, creative team, who did the Naked Samoans. They also did Brotown, the TV show. This is their feature film. It's actually kind of fun. It's about these, you know, four kind of Samoan guys in a city, Auckland, who have to kind of get it together in time for one of their brother's weddings is the first one. And the second one, somebody dies and they all have to pull together and go off on a series of adventures. It's kind of dumb, but it's also kind of sweet and funny as well. So I quite like them.
That's pretty much how I describe everything that they do. It's like I don't hate them for any of it, but at the same time, there's the part of me that goes, sometimes it's really funny, but I always end up leaving with that kind of, yeah, it was all right. That's what I've left everything they've ever done, including Brotown.
I kind of feel sad when I see a film like that. When I walk out of a film and go, yeah, it was all right.
I quite enjoyed it. It actually left me with a good feeling, though, because I genuinely like the characters, that they're actually really, and by the second film, they're really well-drawn characters, and you actually get to know them quite well. So you just like spending time with them. But the narrative, the film itself has got, it's a fairly nothing film when you break it down.
Right. Fair enough.
Yeah. The other film I wanted to quickly mention is, because I'm pretty sure you've seen this already, Josh, but if you haven't, you totally should, is I Saw the Devil.
Ah, yes, I have.
You have seen it, yeah. Now, it's a difficult film to watch, to say
the least. It is, and it was definitely split our household when we watched it. But
I thought the first half of it is close to genius.
Mm.
It's beautifully stylish, and it's wonderfully shot, and really brutal and scary, and it kind of loses its way in the second half.
Now, I watched this in two parts, so it's interesting you say that because I definitely understand where you're coming from. It took me a long time to process the second half of that film and to kind of come to terms with it because I do completely understand why some people really don't like that film and I understand why some people will find it more offensive than interesting. But the thing that really stuck with me about that film is his final moments at the end of the film kind of define the thing. And it's so important to have the three-quarter mark stuff of what happens so that the end works as well as it does. And it's sort of – I do know what you mean, though. It does sink.
No, mm. I actually like that explanation because I do think the final moments – and no spoilers, of course, because it is a film worth seeing the final moments with him are actually so gripping, and you're probably right, they wouldn't work without that whole kind of lead-up chase thing immediately beforehand. So I think that's really good. You've saved the second half of that film for me.
Yeah, it's definitely a film that I think everybody should give it a shot. Expect to be confronted. Definitely, and also I think some people struggle with it as a film because it's like you have to be comfortable with the fact that some people are just bad people, and you've also got to understand that this is going to not have one of those happy endings where it's like he does the right thing or he finds the line. It's like he is literally out for revenge and he gets it. And it's sort of that human component that kind of puts it in perspective while you're watching it, where it's like, there is no right way to do this. This isn't Hollywood. They're actually trying to make it kind of difficult to watch.
And this is what I like about the film. It's kind of like, you know, you've got the bad guy who's irredeemably bad, and you've got this guy who's slowly becoming one, you know, as bad himself, and you kind of sympathize. It's kind of like Park Chan-wook's films, to compare it to another Korean director, things like Sympathy for Mr. Vengeance and Old Boy, where you kind of find yourself getting drawn into this world and you think, well, actually, I can kind of sympathize with both characters here. Here, you're not going to sympathize with the killer at all.
You're not really going to sympathize with either of them, but that's kind of the thing. It's like...
Yeah.
He's crossed the line, and you watch him cross that line, and you watch the repercussions of that.
And I really, really like this director's other work. This is Kim Ji-woon, who's done films like The Good, the Bad, and the Weird, Bittersweet Life, and A Tale of Two Sisters.
Yeah.
And he does really good films. And I think this is probably one of the bigger Korean films the last couple of years, so definitely worth having a look at.
I've been meaning to watch this for some time.
You do, Dave.
Yeah, I've been meaning to watch it. I've actually got a copy of it, and it's just been sitting there. And I don't know what's been holding me back, but something has held me back from watching this film.
Well, there's kids. That's one thing.
Well, that is one factor, yeah.
Yeah.
Finding time to watch
it. On Thursday night, I'm introducing the film at the Korean Cultural Office on on Elizabeth Street in Sydney. So there you go.
It's been very interesting sitting here, you guys talk it out, though, because I'm sitting there thinking, why haven't I watched it? And hearing you guys talk about it, go, I really must watch this.
Yeah, look, Dave, it was definitely one of my favorite films of last year and more important. In fact, wasn't it on my list?
I think it was. It was on some list you had.
Yeah. And the other thing that I wanted to say is it's the main bad guy is slowly becoming one of my favorite actors of this generation.
Oh, he's wonderful. Yeah.
Cool. All right. Anything else, Richard?
No, that'll do.
All right. Fair enough. Going from the sublime to the ridiculous, because you guys are talking about all these quality films you've been seeing. I've kind of been backtracking on some of the stuff I've avoided.
I said Drop Zone.
No. I'm talking. Yeah, no, we're not. We're not talking about the Bargain Bin.
Said Priest.
No, I'm talking about Richard and his in his cultural. You know, whatever.
Come on, dude.
Next time I'll go first,
John. Anyway, the point is I've been going back and actually rewatching films that I actually had no interest in seeing the first time around. And I actually managed to finally watch, what's a film called? I can't see it. It's such a bad film. I can't even remember the name. The Justin Timberlake piece of crap that I watched. What's it called?
No Strings Attached.
Yeah, that's the one. No,
you're telling me about this.
The other one, Friends with Benefits. That's
the one. Oh, yeah, sorry.
It's the other
Friends
one.
Friends with String. I keep getting them.
Friends with String. That's the one. And look, you know, I actually watched it and everybody talked about how terrible this film was. And I actually thought it was actually slightly better than No Strings Attached, but still not a great film. It is really predictable. Garbage, but you know, you do get to see Mila Kunis in a bra and panties for most of the film, so that's actually kind of, you know, made it worth watching. But I know, Joshua, you don't like her, but that's okay.
Tell you what I did watch the other night, which was the one with Anne Hathaway and Jake Gyllenhaal.
Oh, I watched that. Yeah, the Love and Other Drugs.
If you want to see Anne Hathaway nude, actually, that's the film to see. She's naked for most of it,
and it's spectacular.
Yeah.
It is. It's spectacular. And actually, I didn't mind the film either. It was all right.
Nothing special. I didn't care about the film.
I also watched, and I actually, this is the one I really want to talk about more than anything. I watched the Farrelly Brothers film Hall Pass with your friend Owen Wilson.
totally, he's totally in that film.
I knew that was coming.
Yeah. As soon as you said your friend Owen Wilson, you had to expect me
of course, of course. It also had, what's his name from Horrible Bosses? Andy Sudeikis?
Jason Sudeikis.
Jason Sudeikis, that's it. And you know what? A staggering thought occurred to me as I was watching Hall Pass, which is he's not very good. Because he's exactly the same character, exactly the same everything as he is in Horrible Bosses. There is absolutely no character arc or change to him at all. And he's...
It's probably right.
Really interesting to watch because in Horrible Bosses, if you remember, he was kind of a sexist pig who lived his life to go out and get vagina. Remember? And in
that does sound about right.
That's right. And in Hall Pass, he's a misogynistic male chauvinist pig who's all about getting vagina. So it's funny how he
I'm seeing a pattern.
I'm seeing a pattern in his career. And I got to tell you, Owen Wilson looks terrible. He looks like he's had some serious plastic surgery done. He looks odd in the film. The film is terrible. It is some sort of misogynistic sex fantasy about how. These guys' wives will just let them go off and sleep with other women, give them a hall pass, you know, because they're not quite happy in their marriages. It's some sort of weird male fantasy that will never happen in real life. Let me tell you right now.
To give you an idea, I saw the Sydney red carpet premiere of this, which Owen Wilson actually turned up to, and they gave. Us all in the audience, like little gift bag things. And one of the gifts to set the tone of this film was a marker pen, to take down phone numbers. And the other end of the pen was one of those breath spray things.
Quality. So
that set the tone.
Very classy. So what did you think of Hall Pass? Did you actually watch it?
I did. I thought it was a fairly disappointing effort from a group of people that we know is capable of a lot more.
Although, funnily enough, in actually saying that, though, with the exception of There's Something About Mary, really, with the Farrelly brothers, have they really done anything that great?
I think they've done. I mean, because I think there's a lot to like about something like
Shallow
Hal.
Really?
I think there is. I think there's. There's an essential sweetness to a lot of their films.
Kingpin.
Okay, let's just forget Kingpin. no, but I think you know. Steps,
and let's not. And let's not forget the Three Stooges is coming out.
Yeah. Okay. Well, no, let's try and forget that.
Myself, and Irene.
I said that they're capable of more, and you mentioned something about Mary, and that which proves that they are capable of something more. And I think that given that combination with Owen Wilson, who has done a lot of funny films in the last 10 years, particularly when he works with Ben Stiller, of course.
Yeah.
But, you know, that whole team. And I know you say Jason Sudeikis can't act, and you're probably right. And
act. I said he's not very good.
He's a funny person because he's one of the better things on the current Saturday Night Live.
Well, he's a comedian who obviously has a shtick.
I just think the problem with Hall Pass is that it never really found its own identity.
No, and they fell back to the Farrelly brothers' gross-out humor that they used in many of their films in the past, even in There's Something About Mary. And sometimes it works, and on the most part, though, it falls really flat. They sit there and they go, this will be really funny. This will be so shocking, it's funny. I case in points in the Hall Pass, and if you haven't seen it, I don't really recommend you go see it anyway. But the case in points, the girl sitting on the edge of the bathtub. Who is feeling sick, and then she sneezes and then craps herself up against the wall.
Yeah,
you know, and you sit there and go, yeah, I could see that joke coming, and it wasn't funny when I saw it coming, and it wasn't funny when it actually happened. You know, and then there's the joke where Owen Wilson stays in the spa too long and loses all his muscle definition and is taken out of the spa by these two naked men. And of course, the brunt of the joke is the fact that they've got the guy cradled in the black guy's lap and he's got an enormous penis and it's sitting next to his face.
Yeah.
And this is the level of the humor in this film.
Sounds a bit like the sort of humor we saw in Hot Tub Time Machine.
Hot Tub Time Machine did it better. And that's the scariest part, is that was actually really lowbrow as well, but that actually pulled it off. better than this film could.
Okay.
You know?
Oh, and also, just a crime against cinema, Richard Jenkins, which is fascinatingly cast in that film.
Oh, what was he doing in this thing? Oh, it was so embarrassing. Yeah. The only decent sight gag, or even sight, decent...
Oh, sorry, and Stephen Merchant as well.
Oh, and Stephen Merchant was embarrassing, though. It was like he didn't have anything to do. But the Jenkins, the best sight gag in the entire film, the best gag in the entire film, the one where I actually went, yeah, it's kind of cute, is where Jenkins meets him, and he's obviously in the sun all the time. He's brown as brown can be. And at one point, he takes his hat off, and his head is white.
Yeah.
So in other words, he never takes his hat off. So he's got this like white bald head under the hat, which is actually kind of amusing. But other than that,
I don't even remember that.
Oh, but that's near the end of the film. You were probably asleep.
Yeah, probably. Probably. I was getting high on the breath mint they gave me.
There you go.
Or the marker pen.
Anyway, so yeah, I've been kind of lowbrowing it. So I'm trying to catch up with all this stuff that I kind of avoided the first time through. So anyway, we should move on, guys. We should move on. We do have some films to review.
All right, let's do that one.
Let's do this. Now, Josh, I know you haven't seen this. We're going to keep this fairly short. Richard and I actually disagree on this. Let me just say that up front. We already know this. Richard.
That's fine. I'm going to tune in and be a listener for a little while. So I'm going to go back to playing my PlayStation Vita. And I'll jump back in when you guys are ready.
No problem. Fair enough. All right, so Richard, this first film is Like Crazy.
Josh has a PlayStation Vita.
He does.
Yes, he does. As if you're surprised I have new tech.
No, I'm not surprised at all.
Let's all go play that.
I'm going to come over and play that and watch Human Centipede with you.
Oh, sounds like a date.
Wow, there's a party waiting to happen. All right, Like Crazy, written and directed by Drake Dormus. Also co-written by Ben York Jones, and starring Felicity Jones, Anton Yelchin, Jennifer Lawrence. Anybody else of note we should talk about? Oh, there was also Alex Kingston. Alex Kingston was also probably a real note. There's a few people you will also notice. There was actually a very brief cameo by Keeley Hazel, who, for those who don't know, is actually a Page 3 model, who has very large... Okay.
Tracts of land.
Tracts of land, yes. And in fact, until I actually looked at IMDb, I actually had no idea she was even in this, so it had to be a very small role.
Ironically.
All right, so the film is a British college student falls for an American student only to be separated from him when she's banned from the U.S. after overstaying her visa. And that kind of sums it up, and it goes on from there. You know, them trying to get this visa organized and trying to have a long distance relationship and so forth. Let's have a listen to the trailer. We'll come right back and talk about this.
Anna?
Jacob, hi.
Let's go. Where do you want to go?
Tell me everything that happened. Tell me everything you saw.
They had lights inside their eyes. They had lights inside their eyes.
Did you see the closing?
What are we going to do after we
think about it.
They were kids that I once knew. They were kids that I once knew.
Jacob, I'm going to stay.
You can't do that.
Why?
Your visa. Okay.
What's going to happen? You'll be placed on the plane immediately and returned back to the UK.
Hi, Jacob. I'm sorry I missed your call again.
Maybe we can try tomorrow.
Let me know when it's good for you to talk.
I want to know how my new junior editor is doing.
Thank you.
Hello?
Hey.
I'll get there, okay?
Okay.
Unfortunately, I can't lift the ban. I'm sorry.
This doesn't feel like I'm a part of your life. I feel like I'm on vacation.
It's hard to keep stopping and starting.
So won't you please just take my hand?
I thought I understood it, but I didn't. Only the smudgeness of it, the the eagerness of it, the idea of it, of you and me.
All right, Richard. Now, you and I disagree on this film, so I'm going to let you go first.
Oh.
And I'm going to counter you, all right? And I don't
That's really not fair, David, because this is the classic Julius Caesar thing. You go last.
And I don't expect...
And you win the people, but then, like, I get murdered later. No, look,
I don't expect either of us to change each other's opinions, because I think we're just approaching the film from two different directions, and that's fine. And everybody is going to have their own opinion on this, but I'd like to hear your arguments for this film.
Okay. First of all, I think it's worth pointing out that those writing credits we mentioned up the top are interesting because the film is largely ad-libbed.
Mm, that's true.
And what they did was very, very similar to Curb Your Enthusiasm on television. They gave people a scriptment, which is where they give them an outline of what the scene is meant to do, and then they just kind of... interact and ad-lib accordingly as they go along. So if you feel as though the emotions in those scenes were genuine, I really did think that they made a beautiful couple together. It's because they were actually finding these lines and finding their own voice in there. I think it's really interesting that, because I mentioned Curb Your Enthusiasm, which is a comedy, I think it's really difficult to transfer that from being a comedy to something as heartfelt as romance. And to me, and I know you didn't feel this way, David, but I thought this was one of the most beautiful and heartfelt romances I've seen in a long time. Now, what's going to get a lot of people is the pacing. And I know this is one of your major objections, but I think that, first of all, I think that the two strong leads make this an incredibly... intense film. Felicity Jones, who I've really grown to like in the last couple of years, particularly after the completely underrated Chalet Girl.
Agreed.
And Anton Yelchin, of course, from Star Trek, and
Fright Night.
More recently, Jodie Foster's Beaver.
And Fright Night. Don't forget Fright Night.
And Fright Night, of course, yes. And I think, you know, this is basically a two-hander of a film. This is the two of them carry this whole film. And what I think the pacing's interesting because the romance is seems fairly doomed from the start. this is one of those films where it is kind of biding its time for some sort of inevitable conclusion. But I think what's really interesting, because it poses these bigger questions about love, and call me a sucker for this stuff.
All right, you're a sucker for this stuff.
Also, just quickly, I do say one thing I did object to in the film is, does every montage about falling in love have to involve a go-kart?
Yeah, that's part of it.
Yeah, okay, just was wondering.
Although, I've got to say one thing about that, though. I think if you don't have a go-kart in your montage, maybe your relationship will last.
Also,
maybe it's the go-kart is the kiss of death.
I think we have to explore this further. Next week, top five films involving relationships and go-karts.
With go-karts.
yeah, but like, you know, I actually think, you know, they seem to be right on top. When they have relationships with other people, they just feel as though they're kind of, you know, biding their time. And I think Jennifer Lawrence probably has to be one of the most patient people in film history.
We'll come back to that.
Look, you know, I think in the review I wrote for this, I quoted Ryan Adams, not to be confused with Bryan Adams, who on his first album had a song called When You're Young, the lyrics were, when you're young, you get sad, then you get high. And this is pretty much just strips youth down to these bare essentials, really. I mean, that slow and meandering pace, that it will be frustrating to a lot of people. But that kind of, to me, mirrors that sort of aching kind of feeling you have when you're in love and you know it's either not going to be, or it's not going to be what you expected, but you have to keep on sort of living regardless of what the heart wants. I actually found that a really beautiful and touching kind of film, and it just hit me in the right place.
All right, and that's fair. And you know, we were talking about it the other week. You know, extremely loud and incredibly close hit me in the right place. You know, and it didn't hit you.
Yeah.
So this is what I love about cinema: is the fact that it is so subjective. This film, however, I actually found ponderous, and I actually found it. I said to you when we walked out of the cinema, I said, "Boy, first world problems." You know, I just walked out. Okay, so we got this young couple who go, hey, we kind of dig each other. And then she does a stupid thing about staying over her visa to stay with him. And then, of course, gets banned from coming back to the States. So they have to have this long
distance. USA.
USA. And they have to have this long distance relationship. And all I could think all the way through it is they keep talking to each other on the phone, and then they go and they try and see each other. And then, all the way through this film, you sit there going, do you know what? The problem I found with this is I love both of these actors a lot, but I didn't like either of the characters that they were playing. And I didn't actually connect with them because all I could think was stop whining. Do something about it. You know what I mean? He obviously... Yeah. They obviously, money wasn't that big an issue. He was running his own business. She had obviously got rich parents, right? So they could have made this work if they really wanted to. It's like they were dancing around something where you just sit there and go, I don't understand why we're having this dance. So minor spoilers, but it's kind of, it's not a film where you're not going to see the ending coming, but I'm not going to talk about the ending, but somewhere in the middle of the film, they both at some point in this film end up in other relationships.
Mm.
And all I can think is, you seem perfectly happy in those relationships. Move on.
This is where I'm going to disagree with you slightly. And I think that they're in those other relationships, but I think he even actually says it, or Jennifer Lawrence actually says to him at some stage, or he says it to her, can't be in a relationship where I'm not 100% here. And I think that's that bigger question about falling in love. It's kind of like, what if you do get it right the first time?
Yeah, okay.
Time? What
but
if the first person you meet is the person you're meant to be with?
But the problem I had was that I never felt that they were 100% into each other either. Well, only in that first scene. Once they were separated, they never felt like they were 100% within each other anymore.
And that's the other thing. I mean, we see so many movies about falling in love. This is a movie about trying to maintain that love under very difficult circumstances. And I think that was a really interesting approach to me.
Yeah. I just found the film all the way through it. I kept thinking, why do I care? And you walked out of Extremely Loud and said, I just don't like kids. I think you finally said, I just don't like these young people. I sit there going, there are so many bigger issues in the world that demand your attention. This is so... It's almost puerile the way they're behaving with each other.
Actually, if you want to give it a bigger message, I think that there's some subtext here to the U.S. laws around immigration restrictions.
Well, okay, that's not even that much. They kind of hit you over the head with a hammer, really. With it,
yeah, that's true. Well, so did Extremely Loud. If you want to get into that,
absolutely, I agree with you. That's the thing, yeah. And it's what is going to touch you. And I sit there and all the way through like crazy. All I could think was that. There's about a point, first 20 odd minutes of this film, I was actually with them. But there's actually a moment when they finally get back together in the middle of the film, he goes over there to see her.
Mm.
And they are obviously so not suited for each other at that point that you sit there and go, this film is over. You know what I mean? I kind of went, they need to move on from each other now. They obviously can see it. They're fighting. It's like this whole thing about they're 100% into each other. No, they're not.
No, but I don't think that they were saying. I think I disagree with you there because I don't think that they were saying they're 100% with each other through the whole time.
You were just saying to me, the heart knows what the heart wants. But the heart obviously didn't know what it wanted.
But it's kind of this thing. The heart knows what it thinks it wants. And this is the thing.
Is it that concept of young love, perhaps, is what we're looking at here?
Maybe,
concept of love that may not quite understand what love is yet.
Well, the title actually has it. When teenagers and young adults get into each other and they go, I love you so much, it hurts. You know what I mean? It's like Bella
it's interesting Twilight, you mention that because I was thinking that, and I think this is a far more realistic thing. This is kind of like rather than having a woman wailing on her bed for 6 months before going, oh, good, he's back, he can beat me now. Basically the Twilight saga. This is a strong woman who actually gets on with her life and makes another life, but the two of them are actually living in denial through that whole time because they still do on some level love each other, but they just know it's not going to work.
What they're in love with
is the time that they spend away from each other.
They're in love with an idea of what their relationship should be. They're in love with an idea of what it was from the first 10 minutes of the film. And they're actually in love with that concept. And that concept will never come back.
No, of course not.
You know?
But I think this is why it's the portrait of a disintegrating relationship rather than a falling in love. It's what I said before. It's a film about trying to maintain love. And another movie we saw earlier this year, Crazy Stupid Love, was very much about that.
Which
as well.
I actually enjoyed a lot more.
No, I think that is the better film. But I think it's interesting that film, this film, and there was another French film that came out I saw last week as well called Goodbye First Love.
Right.
Which deals with a very, very similar kind of theme, which is that whole idea of trying to maintain love. I just find that an interesting concept.
Look, and there's some interesting points raised in this film, and I don't think the film is a terrible film, but I don't think it's a particularly brilliant film either. And all
you just have no heart, David.
I have a heart. It's just in a different place, I think. All I could think was he seemed perfectly happy with Jennifer Lawrence. You know?
Why wouldn't you be?
Exactly. All the way through it, he seemed perfectly happy with her, and he keeps dumping her, and she just keeps taking him back. It's like, what the hell?
Yeah, I didn't find her character terribly realistic.
No. Anyway, look, it's if you like... Look, and I got a full disclaimer here. The film has a real before sunset, before sunrise kind of feel to it. And I didn't like either of those films either.
Oh.
So, and
probably won't like Weekend then either.
Probably not. And this whole concept of, you know, that you were talking at the beginning, you were talking about the idea that they would get a scriptette and then they would actually improvise out the scenes, and that works for comedy, but, you know, drama makes it harder. Henri Jaglom was actually doing that for years in the 80s and early 90s. He did films like Always and stuff like that, not the Spielberg one, another one. And he would actually literally get his cast together, they would improvise the film, and he'd be concocting a script out of the improvised film. You know what I mean? So it's not a new concept. It's been done a lot, and there's some filmmakers who have done it a lot better. And I just kind of...
I agree with you, and I don't think this is a perfect film by any means.
No, and one last thing. I like Anton Yelchin. I thought he was really, really charming in Fright Night, and I thought he was really, really fantastic as Chekhov. I actually didn't like him very much in this. I actually found him quite annoying in this, actually. And it's the character. I actually found his character vaguely annoying. I love Felicity Jones, and I actually liked her in this, too. But I just didn't buy the relationship because I didn't buy him. I didn't buy why she would be attracted to him. He seems
dreamy.
He came across as standoffish. He came across as closed off. I guess that, you know, that's that whole Twilight thing with Bella, though. That's what they like. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, oh, he seems to, he acts like he hates me. I love him.
All right. So this is one I guess we'll have to agree to disagree
on. We will agree to disagree. But it's out in cinemas now. Go see it for yourselves and write to us. Let us know what you think. I'm sure there's people going to be agreeing with you much more than they agree with me.
Tell us if you want us, need us, love us, and miss us like crazy.
And then I will act like I hate you.
Yeah. And I'll make you a chair, David.
And they will want me more for wanting to seeing that I hate them. Anyway, let's move on. Josh, are you back?
Yeah, I'm here.
Let's get our Japanese on.
Hey.
Okay. Hi. All right, so our good friends over at Mad Men Entertainment sent us Blu-ray copies of Space Battleship Yamato. We had talked about it on this show several times, saying how much we wanted to see this film. When it came out on Blu-ray, we got our hands on it. Now, we have been meaning to talk about this film for many weeks, but there's been too many films out to get this review out. So let's talk about this. This is Takashi Yamazaki's live-action version of the classic animated film, which is it based on manga?
I think it was originally, it could be based on manga originally, but most people will know the cartoon, certainly in North America and Australia, as Star Blazers.
Star Blazers in itself is based on a 70s animated feature film called Space Battleship Yamato as well.
Correct.
Now, I was a big fan of the feature film back in the 70s. I saw it on TV, actually, when I was a kid, and I thought it was absolutely awesome. And this film pays a lot of homage to that cartoon, including the battleship coming out of the ground and everything, which is just fantastic. What did you guys think of Space Battleship Yamato?
Well, I'll go because I've been quiet all this time.
Please.
I found it quite interesting. To me, it always seems strange when you're watching a movie, which is a movie that is an older thing brought to life in a positive thing, because I always find myself debating with myself where to pull it up on things, because it'd be like, I'd look at someone, I'd be like, that's so Battlestar Galactica. I'm like, yeah, but is that Battlestar Galactica, or is that the original film? And it's like, I felt myself doing that a lot with this, because this seemed to borrow from every sci-fi ever made. And I should probably start by saying I didn't hate it. But the thing that I felt really interesting is by the time I got to the end, I was actually like, if you draw this out any longer, I think I'm just going to pee myself, because I was just completely and utterly in tears of laughter at the end for just how long they were stringing it out. Like, I was with it the whole rest of the film, but when the film goes into its final conclusion mode, it's like watching, and this is a Dragon Ball Z reference for all old school fans, it's the Frieza saga all over again. It's just like this giant, long 20-minute like goodbye scene that I was like, what is going on? Why don't you – there's a giant thing doing something over there. It's going to why are you spending so long on this? And I was yelling at my TV, and it's been a long time since I've yelled at my TV in a film. Everything else fantastic, and I'm going to leave it to you guys to see the next step.
It's like that there was that Robot Chicken sketch where they sent up Voltron, and it's kind of like, you know, Voltron form, and they did the whole montage where Voltron's forming, meanwhile the space station's been destroyed. I actually think you said it borrowed from a lot of science fiction films. I think it also borrows fairly heavily from Top Gun.
Yes.
And the pretty boy Takuya Kimura is,
and he had luscious hair too.
Yeah, he's got
a
luscious
hair. He's amazing. He's dreamy.
He's so dreamy. One thing I want to mention about this film is that the special effects and the look of it, $24 million budget.
Actually, I'll correct you on that. According to IMDb, I'm looking at it right now. It actually says $12 million.
$12 million? I don't know. My original thing was $24 million. Maybe that's 24.
Dude, either way, it doesn't matter.
Either way,
it's a cheap ass budget. It's given mine's exactly double yours. That's interesting. Anyway,
I'm looking at Box Office Mojo to break the tie. Hold on.
Anyway,
what do you think?
Keep going.
Anyway, sorry. It was, I think it looks better than a film that's got, you know, six times that budget. It looks at least just as good as, and at least it looks just as good as a top-notch episode of Star Trek or something like that. Mm. I think that the narrative itself is a fairly straightforward thing. As I said, it's kind of mired in that Top Gun sort of thing, and there is a fair bit of swoonage over Kimura. We've seen this all before. As Josh, as you said, it's hard to tell how much of this is the inspiration and how much of this is inspired by other things, because we're sort of at that point. And this is one thing I said about John Carter as well. It's like with John Carter, it's a 100-year-old story. Yes, it came before Star Trek and Avatar, but undoubtedly they've both influenced each other at this point. And in fact, apparently the star actually saw Avatar and said, look, dude, said to the director, dude, we need to amp up our special effects a little bit, because it's not going to be enough for Japanese style special effects to compete against the rest of the world. They don't quite get there, of course, but I think despite the fact that almost every plot development is telegraphed long before it happens, it's still a fairly high spirited adventure. You know, it's got that kind of cheesy 70s kind of thing happening to it, and I kind of dig that.
I agree. Yeah.
I could let it go. To me, it felt a lot like watching a video game, and I know that, you know, that wouldn't be the first time I've said that, and I would definitely know a few things about that sort of stuff. But like, it really felt like a storyline to a video game to me.
Yeah.
And I was okay with that. I think they did well with what they what they had.
Sorry, like Wing Commander or something.
Yeah, very much like Wing Commander. There you go.
Yeah,
Not the movie.
Not the movie, the games. Yeah.
Exactly. all right, I'm gonna agree with you mostly. I'm gonna say that I actually really enjoyed the film as a fan of the cartoon. It was like a live action version of the cartoon. I mean, right down to the look of the ship and the costumes and everything.
Oh, really, and enjoyed the captain.
And the captain with that beard and everything. And I will say that Misa Kuroki, the playing Yuki, the female lead,
yes.
she was dreamy too.
She's a fox.
She's a fox, man. This was a lot of fun. I agree with you, though, Josh. I thought the last act, when they actually went down to the planet and they had the big, like, marine battle down on the planet, you know, when they're actually down and they're in their spacesuits and stuff, I actually got bored. It lost me in the last, I was so with this film until that last part. And it made me think, once again, not in style or story or anything, but of the movie Akira, which is, there is a point in Japanese films where they kind of go, how do we end this? I don't know. Let's just go crazy.
can I just add one thing to this quickly, which is I saw this at a cinema.
Oh, yeah?
I saw this at the Japanese Film Festival, and it is definitely a cinema spectacle. And as good as the Blu-ray is, and it is a very good-looking Blu-ray, I think that this is first and foremost a popcorn thing. Mm. And it's kind of like when you see it with a big audience like that, it's still got all the same problems, but it's, you know, you get that sense of the grand spectacle as well.
It's the same sort of thing that I get after when I rewatch something like Independence Day, where it's like it worked the first time, but from then on, it's sort of like by the third act, I'm actually kind of over the film already.
Yeah. Damn.
Yeah, a little bit. So I found the last act, and the last act actually almost feels out of place in this film. But I really like all the battleship stuff, and I really love, I just love the captain. That's why I love that captain. Yeah. I swear. Is there a grumpier looking man on the planet? That's what I
if not, they couldn't find him and cast him because they were obviously aiming for that.
He's a wonderful, wonderful character sitting in that chair.
That's Tsutomu Yamazaki played.
He's fabulous. He's just fabulous. You're right, Richard. The visuals are fantastic. Now we've got two in that direction. Wikipedia puts it at 23.9 million, so that's close enough to your 24. So I'd say it's probably around the $24 million mark.
So it's somewhere between 12 and $24 million.
Somewhere in there. But either way, in this day and age, Hollywood could pay attention to this. Because the film looks great. It doesn't. It's not in the same league as, say, Avatar. Okay, granted, but it still looks great. You know what I mean? And that's all it really needs. So it doesn't have to be $100 million worth of visuals when $23.9 million seems to be doing just fine. You know.
And the thing is, I think the thing that to point out with this is that you can see all $24 million on screen. Often on a $250 million film, you wonder where the money's gone.
Yeah. Exactly. Yes. Yeah. And yes, this film has a few problems. I didn't understand some of the, and I'm sure on repeated viewings, I would probably go, oh, maybe. But on first viewing, there's a few things in it where you kind of sit there and go, but where did he and how did he?
No, I don't think that's going to improve.
No, it may not improve.
I think we all saw that.
Yeah, and you kind of sit there and go, but, and what? You know, all the way through. And there are moments like that all the way through the film. And it's the sheer fun of this film. It never takes itself too seriously, you know. And who is it? Said Top Gun. Richard.
That was him.
So true. Richard. There's a lot of that Top Gunishness on the flight deck and all this sort of stuff, and you know. And I love the fact that the Japanese are not.
I feel the need for speed.
Sorry.
I love the fact that the Japanese feel the need to make everything into robots. There's that show where he's flying in his spaceship and he's going to get her, and suddenly his ship sits up and it's got arms and legs. He's there and go, and it looks great. He's there and go, why? Why would they have built that?
You know what, Dave? You're asking too many questions if you're in a Japanese movie and you're asking questions like that.
If you're in a Japanese film and you're asking why are they robots, you've definitely tuned into the wrong
time. But I do.
Their version of Like Crazy had robots.
That's true. That's true. And then
he built her a mecha drone. In that version.
You've said in ages, Richard. Well done.
But I am going to say that it is worth going out and buying the Blu-ray for this. It's a lot of fun. Oh,
dude, absolutely. If nothing else, just as a sci-fi fan to have it in your collection, because it's definitely really good.
Yeah,
it deserves to be in a collection of sci-fi classics.
It's a grumpy captain and lots of really, really good-looking crew people.
In fancy jackets.
In fancy jackets and a really awesome space battleship.
And a cat.
And a cat.
No sense, or doesn't need to be there.
Oh, and his little robot thing that he wears on his wrist.
I love that thing.
Analyzer. That's right, analyzer robot. Which happens
you mean to R2-D2.
That's right, which happens to conveniently fit into his jet.
And make noises like R2-D2.
Absolutely. Yes, there's a lot of influences going in both directions. Really good stuff. You guys recommending this? Richard, well, I heard of Josh Ray Richard.
Yeah, definitely worth a look.
Fair enough. Cool stuff. All right, we need to move on, guys. We're actually at 50 minutes. We're running late on this show.
Oh, who cares, Dave?
Here's a show where we thought we were going to come in light because there was nothing to talk about. Ha 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 ha. Okay. Let's do a list of five.
I've got 14 films on my list of five.
let's fly through a list of five, and we should say this list is coming from a listener. We actually have a couple of emails. Now, we haven't done emails in a while because we've always been running very late. And I just want to run through a couple of these. So a couple of these are from February, but we're not going to read the whole thing. It's just a couple of little points. First of all, Frank wrote to us. Sorry, it's taken a while to get here, Frank. But Frank wrote to us and said, Hi, guys, long time, first time. Since Richard has joined the cast, I seem to pick up that he has a bit of a crush on Olivia Wilde.
No.
He says, I certainly stand with him in his admiration for such a stunning woman. The other night I was surfing Hulu, so we know where he's from, and came across the movie The Death and Life of Bobby Z, and was curious if he had seen this one. Richard?
No, I haven't.
Okay, you'll be looking for this one because it says, while not a great movie, there is a great side shot of a topless Olivia. Just thought I'd throw that out there. Anyway, you'll keep up the good work.
Yeah, it's already in my Amazon basket. Oh, and it's got Paul Walker and Lawrence Fishburne in it.
Oh, dreamy. Dude. Cool. All right.
And Olivia Wilde side boob.
And we also, this one comes from St. Louis. Is it St. Louis? St. Louis. Louis? St. Louis.
Hang on. I think it's St. Louis. How's the song go? Meet me in
St. Louis. St. Louis, Missouri. Now it says, hi guys, I just saw an advertisement for a movie called Tomorrow the War Began. called Tomorrow the War Began, that's coming to the U.S. February 24th. When did we talk about this, Josh?
Like a million years ago, I didn't watch it, so I don't know.
He says, I read the storyline, and it seems like an Australian version of Red Dawn. Yeah. As it came out in Australia in 2010, I was wondering if anyone has heard of this movie or has seen it. Just wanted to see if it was worth my time to hunt it down in theater to see it. Sandy from St. Louis, no, don't hunt it down. Wait for DVD if
dear
you really
God,
want to see
no.
it. No, don't hunt it down. We actually, I reviewed it. Josh didn't see it. I reviewed it
a
long time ago when this show used to be called Geek, actually. Go back and find the past episode. You'll actually find it, and you'll see that I actually said that, although not awful, nothing special. Frank,
I'll counter that by saying that the scene in the truck's pretty good.
Which scene in the truck?
The scene where they've got like the garbage truck and the thing attached to the front of it.
I don't even remember it.
That's it. Like the rest of it is your pretty standard plotting.
All right, now,
no, dude, if I dug really hard, I could probably find a scene as good as that in Drop Zone, and that's not a positive point.
Oh, we should totally do a Drop Zone versus Tomorrow When the War Began.
There you go. There's an episode.
You're fucking on, man.
There's an episode. Frank writes back again and says, hi, guys, or hey, guys. I know I've written recently. Yeah, you did. We just read it. But I just had to say something. Richard wants to see Mila Kunis, but can't even spare the time for Halle's berries.
Mila's Kunis.
It says Swordfish may not have been his cup of tea, but there were at least two high points. Keep up the good work. Yeah, thank you very much for that, Frank. Very nice.
That's true.
Yeah, that's true. That's very nice. All right,
Mila's Kunis and Halle's berries.
There you go.
It makes me disco Olivia Wilde.
All right, but most importantly, Geek Betty wrote to us and she sent me some links for some various stuff. But very important, we'll say it very quickly. She said, this article that she sent through, which was talking about the 10 worst best picture winners, which was an interesting article in itself, but she said, this made me think that a list of films that should have won the Oscar when nominated but didn't would be good. And I agree with you, and that's why this week's list is five Academy Award nominated films that should have won best film.
Right. Now, I have to put a stipulation at the start of this, Dave, which is that I don't want any interference from somebody who's watched almost every Oscars ever made, because my decisions are not only final on my list, but they also have my reasons, and you won't agree with quite a few of them.
No, and that's fine. And I think we're actually going to keep our
Fuck you, Josh.
We're actually going to keep our narrative to a minimum, because we are running very long on this episode so far. So let's just kick this off. And I mean, this is so subjective, it's unbelievable. So we're just going to kick through it and see how we go. I'm going to start us off and say my number five is Black Swan. It was beaten by The King's Speech, which I thought was a fine film, but I think Black Swan was by far the better film in 2010.
Agreed.
Agreed. Richard, you're number five.
The Color Purple.
Oh, so agree with you.
1985, lost to Out of Africa.
I know. Isn't it shameful?
And Color Purple holds the record, I think, for most number of nominations without any wins.
11 nominations, no wins, and Spielberg wasn't even nominated.
Yeah, I think why Academy hates Spielberg, I'll never know.
There was something very wrong in that year. Josh, you're number five.
My number five, Dave, funnily enough, is exactly the same as yours, which was Black Swan. I adored that film more than anyone seems to let me, because everybody's like, yeah, it was all right. No, it wasn't fucking all right. It was an amazing film, and it deserved the Oscar and missed it.
Agreed. Look, I thought King's Speech was fabulous, but I think Black Swan was better.
Yeah.
As far as I'm concerned, and same with you. All right, so my number four is Apocalypse Now, which actually lost to Kramer versus Kramer in 1979. A good film, but really, when you look at it, and we look at it today, and we say, which film had staying power? no arguments.
That
there.
Scene at the end of Kramer versus Kramer, when they slice the wife cow comes up? Back and says that you're a grocery clerk sent by... assassins, you
know? And she's bald, right?
She's bald, yeah. She just shaved her head completely, and
oh dear. I like Kramer versus Kramer, but Apocalypse Now was groundbreaking. Richard, your number four.
Number four is Dr. Strangelove, 1964, which lost My Fair Lady.
Oh my God,
man! There has been some missteps.
There's been a few.
I'll wait till I get to number three.
Yeah, there's been a few missteps over the years. Josh, your number four.
My number four is one. Now, this is a personal one, and I definitely know Dave really liked this film. But in 1971, The French Connection won that year. But I actually think, in my perfect world, I would have wanted The Exorcist to win, because for what it did to horror and what it did to giving it validity, I think it deserved more credit than it got.
I agree with all of your comments, although The French Connection is also brilliant. Yes. So that's a hard year.
But that's the problem. A lot of the cases in this list are going to be like that, where it's not so much about them being bad films. It's about us preferring the other one.
Yeah.
Can I just say, when I was going through this list, looking at the films of the 70s, almost every year I was like, you know, any five of those could have won quite legitimately.
And, you know, it's really interesting in going back over the Oscars list. It really shows you that the strength of the contenders has changed over the years.
Yeah.
It really has. All right, let's keep moving. My number three is The Shawshank Redemption, which actually lost in 1994 to Forrest Gump.
Now, I have something from that year on my list as well, but it's a little bit later on.
Right, I actually really liked Forrest Gump, but The Shawshank Redemption is a near-perfect film.
You know, we'll come back to that.
We'll come back to that one. Richard, you're number three.
Number three is Citizen Kane, 1940, which lost to How Green Was My Valley.
Very famous. Very famous. Mm. I totally agree. Totally agree with you. God.
Yeah, one of the greatest films ever made, losing to a film that most people can't remember.
Yeah.
But I have to have some affinity to it because I'm half Welsh.
Fair enough.
That's your reasoning.
Yeah.
I love it.
But, Richard, how green is your valley? Wow. Josh, you're number three.
As green my as number as Kunis. Sorry.
Oh.
So anyway, my number three is, look, 1980, The Ordinary People won.
Yep.
Yep.
Now, look, I have nothing against that film. Sure. Great film. Again. But Raging Bull.
Agreed.
It's just, look, I mean, it's not perfect, but
it's such an intense film and such a character piece. And when I weigh it up against Ordinary People, I'm like, no, I'm sorry.
Can I point
out
what
else came out that year? The Elephant Man.
Yeah, I was actually looking at that year a lot when I was doing this, because I was thinking The Elephant Man is a masterpiece. And Raging Bull, 10 years later, was actually deemed the best film of the 80s.
Exactly.
And yet it couldn't win the Oscar for the year that it came out. The American Film Institute feels it's the best film of the 80s. All right. My number two is actually, and this is going to be a hot contention with Richard, but my number two is definitely Star Wars in 1977, right, because Annie Hall beat it, which is a fine film. Love Annie Hall, but Star Wars changed the world.
Were you serious? I mean, you know, you're like, you know, this is like Kafka or some really long Swedish film. I mean, my God, I feel nauseous.
Here is a film that came along and literally changed the face of cinema. And
I will agree with you that Star Wars did more for cinema, but I actually think as a film, Annie Hall's a better made film.
But I can say with absolute certainty that I have seen Star Wars comes at least 50 times more than Annie Hall. You know what I mean?
I think I'm pasting it at the moment.
Fair enough. Richard, what's your number two?
My number two, and I know you've got something from this year as well, but my number two is The Thin Red Line.
Yep.
1998. I think it's still one of Terrence Malick's masterpieces. It lost to Shakespeare in Love, which and a film which I feel is going to be on your list, Dave. It also lost to Shakespeare in Love.
Yeah.
Also a World War II film. So.
Yeah. I'll come back to that.
Yeah.
Look, I think that Shakespeare in Love was a perfect example of a film that bought the Oscar.
Yep. Maybe.
There's not a lot of argument there. And look, it's a fun film. Liked it a lot. But once again, was it the best film of the year? We'll come back to that. All right. Josh, number two.
My number two is a similar situation, and I really struggled with this, and I want to let Richard know this because I want him to know he's not alone. I struggled with picking between Saving Private Ryan and Thin Red Line because I'm one of the few people on the planet that thinks that film is fucking amazing, and I don't think it gets enough credit, but I still think when I weigh the two up together that Saving Private Ryan is the better film, but it's a personal choice.
Mm.
And that's fair enough. And let's go through a rocket round of number ones. And Josh, I'm going to be in complete agreement with you. My number one is Saving Private Ryan, which lost to Shakespeare in Love in 1998 and was a real upset. That was a real upset. A lot of people were really annoyed that Shakespeare in Love actually beat any of the other contenders for that
year. It was a good year.
It was a good year. And there was actually much more powerful films on tap. And the Weinsteins bought the Oscar. It's a well-known story. In they spent so much money on advertising and promoting Shakespeare in Love to win that Oscar that they literally bought it. And it's kind of shameful. That year was actually kind of shameful, I think.
Weinstein!
Richard, your number one.
Number one is Pulp Fiction, which lost to Forrest Gump the same year that Shawshank Redemption lost to Forrest Gump.
Yep.
I think that Pulp Fiction is a film that, you know, Tarantino has got a lot of followers and a lot of detractors, but for me, that's the film where he got the balance right and completely tapped in to this cool factor, which I don't think he's ever really bettered since.
I agree. I don't think he has bettered it since.
Yeah.
Mm.
I think, you're right. Actually, that's a really hard year, isn't it? As much as I think Shawshank is a perfect film, Pulp Fiction is a film that everybody copies now.
Mm. Mm. But look, also that year up for contention was Four Weddings and a Funeral, which everybody copies now.
Which is also a terrific film.
You know, there's these years as you go through.
Yeah.
94, 1939, you know, 1974, but most of the 70s, as I said, it's almost impossible to separate them.
Yeah, it is. Josh, your number one.
Well, my number one's obvious because it is my favorite film of all time, and that is, of course, The Shawshank Redemption. I don't care what anybody says about Forrest Gump. It's a lovable film. It really is, but Shawshank is... Shawshank is one of the few films that I've ever watched that no matter how many times I watch it, when I get to the end, I get up and I literally feel accomplished. Like, I feel like I have a direction. You know, it's just, it completely fulfills me with hope.
That was the last time I saw Andy Dufresne.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the most inspirational film that involves anal rape I've ever seen.
You obviously haven't seen Big Stan. No. I take that back. Why did I even bring that up? I hated that film so much.
I'm just going to disconnect now.
Great lists all around, guys. I think it's very interesting that we all kind of stuck to the 70s onwards. Oh, no, you had Citizen Kane. That's right.
I Citizen Kane. Can I mention just a couple of quick earlier ones then? I just had it almost ran. 1939 is an impossible year.
Is this Gone with the Wind? Yeah.
Gone with the Wind 1. But this is the year. And let me just run this down really quickly. 1939 had Goodbye, Mr. Chips, Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, Of Mice and Men, Stagecoach, The Wizard of Oz, and Wuthering Heights.
Yeah, you pick one.
Yeah, exactly. I picked Wizard of Oz because I think it was...
So what was that, Josh? Hello, Josh.
Dude, I didn't say anything for like a minute, so either that cut in or you guys were...
I thought you were cutting in on us. I thought you were saying you had a point to make to that.
No.
We got a sound echo from the past.
Can I also just throw out there that almost all of the Lord of the Rings films, beside the last one, like Fellowship of the Ring, which I think was an amazing achievement in filmmaking, lost to Chicago, which was a restaged musical.
You know what? With the Lord of the Rings, though, I don't begrudge them because at least they got the one for Return of the King.
So
I look at it and go, there's the Oscar for the series.
But that's what the Oscars do. They always give it to things a few years after they should get it.
I know. I agree.
I mean, look, you know, how Up lost to The Hurt Locker, or how...
Wait. I actually had a problem with Up actually being in the running because it had won Best Animated Film. It had its own category. It's the same thing as Life is Beautiful, which was a fantastic film. And it actually won Best Foreign Film. And then to be nominated again in Best Picture...
I think that's valid, though.
I don't know. I think if you're going to have a separate category for it, have a second category, or don't have the separate category.
Yeah, I see where you're coming from. But, I mean, just other things like... another one we didn't mention was Chariots of Fire, 1981, Raiders of the Lost Ark, one of the most groundbreaking adventure stories ever made.
Agreed,
you know?
There as well.
you know, Brokeback Mountain loses to Crash, which I thought was one of the most obvious racial relations films.
Can I say a shameful confession? I still haven't seen Crash.
Yeah,
the TV series is better.
Oh, really? I think the problem with it is I watched Crash and I just went, so this is just Traffic, but not about drugs this time.
It's about race relations in a real.
Yeah, exactly. It's like I'm like, you guys have kind of done this film before, and then we had Babel, and that was just another one.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm done.
Fair enough. All right, dudes, we're over time. We're going to have to get out of here. Thank you to all those people who wrote to us. If you want to write to us, you can send your feedback to feedback@filmactually.com. I actually think I got that wrong last week. I think I said it was actually filmactually or filmactually.com. So feedback@filmactually.com. You can also send us a voicemail if you want to, you know, have your voice heard on our show. 02-801-1-3167, or our Skype ID is geekactually, all one word. Josh, where can people find out more about you on the internet?
Pro DLC is a gaming website. You should go over and check it out.
Cool.
That's it. Wow. I'm changing it up again.
Fair enough. Richard, where can people find you?
Well, yeah, I mean, Raw DLC is a... No, sorry, other one.
That's me.
Sorry, I'm tired. I'm just copying what you're doing. TheRealBits.com, TheRELBits.com. It's mainly a film website. You should also check it out. And you should also check out me on Twitter, @DVDBits.
Fantastic. And you can find me at geekactually.com and on Twitter @DavidMcVeigh. You should also check out our other show, Behind the Panels, which is our comic book podcast. That's a lot of fun as well. You can find that on the feed or at geekactually.com.
That's even better than this show. Sorry, Josh, but it is. No.
Excuse me.
You guys think whatever you want, man. I'll just do my own thing.
Josh, this is still our show. We'll kick him off. What do you reckon?
I like him. Keep
it's
him in the
fine.
Background.
I don't need you guys.
We'll keep him in the background.
Like, you just said that sample of me saying, it's really dark in here.
Oh, what, you mean this one?
It's really dark in here.
Yeah, that one.
No, not that one. The other one.
Batman.
That one? Hey, I'm amazing. And Josh, just so you're not left out.
Give us all your money.
There you go.
That's terrible. We need a better one of them.
Tell me what you're doing in that film. We're going to see if we can find another film. You're in a couple of Nikki's films. We'll see if we can find another clip. All right, guys, that's going to be it. Oh, we usually plug friends. All right, Real Junkies and reboundradio.com. And you can find Real Junkies. Very good timing, right when we're trying to plug.
Sorry.
Real Junkies, find them at weekendronin.com. They do a movie podcast and they like to get drunk and it's a lot of fun. And Rebound Radio, Brad and Charlie, they're our friends. Go check them all out. It's all really good. It's getting very late. I'm very tired. Let's move on.
I'm clearly dying.
You're dying in the background. Guys, next week we're doing John Carter.
Oh, yeah.
So everybody go out and go see John Carter because we will have a spoiler section on that film, I'm sure. And we'll see you all next week. Yes?
Bye.
Yes.
Bye.
Everybody go see more movies. You don't see enough movies and all life's questions around some movies. And we'll see you next week. Bye-bye, everyone.
Did you touch them? Did you hold them? Did they follow you to town?
They make me feel I'm falling down. They make me feel I'm falling down.
Was there one you saw too clearly? Did they seem too real to you?
They were kids that I once knew. They were kids that I once knew.
I can say it, but you won't believe me. You say you do, but you don't deceive me. It's hard to know they're out there. It's hard to know that you still care. I can say it, but you won't believe me. You say you do, but you don't deceive me.
Bye.
What was that? Bye. I'm going to put that at the end of the music. I'm going to cut it. So it's gonna go, bye, everybody. Music's going to play at the very end. Go, bye.
I thought I was being enthusiastic.
Bye. I'm putting that on the soundboard. Put that at the end of every show. Bye.